Off the ball.
GAA. Haven't beaten them in the championship since 2008, I think. So you know, it's a fair long time. So obviously, like, it's not going to be so much on the day, but the preparation that we do between now and then. So
join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. World Cup Daily on Off the Ball with Lynx, a proud sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026.
Hello and welcome along to Monday's World Cup Daily. I'm Phil Egan. Coming up today, Canada booked their spot in the last 16 thanks to a late winner in LA. We look ahead to more action at the tournament today with Brazil up against Japan and the Netherlands take on Morocco in two blockbuster clashes in the last 32. And after Saturday's less than impressive performance against Panama, can England really go all the way and win the World Cup? But first, the last night, co-host Canada are into the last 16 of a World Cup for the first time in their history. Stefan Eustachio scored in the 92nd minute to give them a 1-0 win over South Africa in California. Manager Jesse Marsh hopes the way they got the win will give them some momentum going forward.
The timing of the goal means that the win is incredibly dramatic, and I think the effect that it will have in Canada and the inspiring of people will be immense.
The goal scorer Eustachio was overcome with emotion post-match as he spoke about both of his parents he'd lost in recent years. And Jesse Marsh says the on-loan LAFC midfielder is a great person.
I couldn't think of a more deserving human being. In a group of incredible human beings, maybe Steph is the most deserving to have a moment like that.
So Canada will play the winner of the Netherlands and Morocco in the last 16 in Houston on Saturday. Today, attention turns to Brazil's meeting with Japan. Carlo Ancelotti's side top Group C with wins over Scotland and Haiti after their draw with Morocco in their opening group game. Japan were second in Group F after draws against Sweden and the Netherlands and a win over Tunisia. That game in Houston kicks off at 6 o'clock this evening. Then at 9:30, Germany take on Paraguay in Boston. Germany will have to do without centre-half Nico Schlotterbeck due to injury. Sunderland defender Omar Alderete is out for Paraguay due to injury. Brighton midfielder Diego Gomez is suspended. Germany haven't kept a clean sheet in the World Cup since the 2014 final. So that's 9 games in a row now they've conceded a goal. In the early hours of Tuesday morning, the Netherlands take on Morocco for a place in the last 16 against Canada. They meet at the Monterrey Stadium in Mexico in one of the standout games in the first knockout round. Dutch captain Virgil van Dijk says they're very wary of their opponents.
Against a team with a lot of quality, one of the best right-backs in world football at the moment. I think you have a striker in Saibari who's obviously very much in form, had a great season. Experienced goalie, good manager. These are the games you want to be part of.
Morocco have 3 Dutch-born players in their squad. Nusair Masraoui, Sofiane Amrabat and Anas Salah Adina. And there's a large Moroccan community in the Netherlands. It's estimated around 430,000 people who live in the country. Players such as Khaled Boularouz and Ibrahim Afellay are examples of players of Moroccan heritage who've played for the Dutch in the past. Cody Gakpo will stay with the Dutch squad despite the loss of his unborn son. His partner announced over the weekend the couple were expecting a second child together due in October. Gakpo has started all 3 games for Ronald Koeman's side so far in the tournament. He scored 2 goals against Sweden. Kickoff in Monterrey is 2 a.m. Irish time. And World Cup Daily and Off the Ball is brought to you by Lynx, a proud sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026. Smell your best when you look your worst. Pico Lopez played another key role in Cape Verde's astonishing run to the last 32. They drew nil-all with Saudi Arabia on Friday night. Next up for Lopez and the rest of his team is Argentina in Miami on Friday. And on Saturday's football show, Johnny Ward and Shane Keegan joined John Duggan in studio and paid tribute to one of the League of Ireland's shining examples.
I did wonder after the first game, were they going to do an Ireland and Italia 90 and potentially draw their way into the last 32 in this instance. And it's mind-blowing. And as Pico said after the game, JD, like, they'll have played 3 previous World Cup winners, which is just incredible. And they had good chances last night, but like this, they're not fluked at all by getting there. And I kind of like the fact they finished second in the group as well. Like, they would have gotten through in the old kind of two getting through. And lovely scenes with Stephen Bradley having, you know, mobile phones have been a kind of dystopian feature of this World Cup where everyone seems to be filming who's actually at the game. You know, it's been kind of weird watching that, but you see the other side of it then when Pico can just talk to his manager in the studio and, like, he's just such a an inspiration to people. Like, Pico was not, I mean, when Pico started off in the League of Ireland, a lot of people would probably have thought he'd have a run of the League of Ireland career, let alone be playing to this level at the World Cup. And what he does in relation to Messi and that is going to be, I mean, he must be waking up some mornings just thinking, is this really happening at this stage of my career, let alone happening at all? Like, is he going to, Messi obviously isn't that mobile now, but is he thinking like, am I going to be just like frightened of these passes he's going to put in, or who's going to pick him up at the edge of the box? But I think as a fan of any country, like that's a low key country, that moment between getting out of the group and the knockout game is one of the best times. Like, you remember after Ireland, like after Hungary, between Hungary and Czechia, that time, and we were only just getting into a playoff. Remember how buoyed we were, and for Pico to have this to look forward to, like it's. The World Cup is so much wrong with it, but it's so much right as well, and this is part of it.
You kind of don't need to tell everybody just how sound he is, because he's kind of done a good job of putting that across himself anyway. Like, there's a lot of League of Ireland players who might have had this chance, might have gone out there, and we'd be happy to see them out there. And but, like, if we were to pick one to hold up as the best of us in terms of personality traits and, you know, wanting to send somebody out there saying, you're going to be on the world stage in games, you're going to be on the world stage after games with the James Corden interviews and the RTE interviews and all that kind of stuff. Lads, we need a safe pair of hands here. We need somebody who's going to reflect this in a good light. Who are we going to choose to land at the World Cup and reflect well on us as footballers in this country? He's the one you'd have picked. Like, genuinely, he's the one you would have picked, because he's just rock solid.
You can listen back to Football Saturday in your OTB Football podcast feed now and each and every Saturday afternoon. Newcastle forward Johan Wissa says he can't wait to face England at the World Cup. The African side finished third in Group K when they beat Uzbekistan, and they've also drawn with Portugal in that group as well. Wissa says the winner takes all game against England is why you work so hard at football.
It's going to be a different game, a tough game against a top player, tough opponent. We need to enjoy this kind of game. We deserve to play against England, one of the best teams in the world. So yeah, I'm looking forward to what's coming next.
Former Ireland manager Brian Kerr was on Off the Ball on Saturday and spoke about England's prospects in the tournament. He feels they won't go all the way like they did in 1966.
Can England win it, Brian?
I think they can, but I don't think they will. I think that there was an overreaction to how well they played against Croatia in the 4-2 win, and then there was an overreaction to how bad they were against Ghana. But that's always what we expect, because we hear the English media version of it, and it's always over the top. But it was surprising how difficult they found against Ghana, even though Ghana were disciplined, organised, and varied between a 4-5-1 and a 5-4-1 and got everyone compact behind the ball. England struggled to break them down. Reliance on Harry Kane, and when it doesn't click for Harry, where's the goals going to come down? I think they've got to get Saka back into the team. They've been using him in bits and pieces now. I think he'll make a difference. Trouble with Reece James, been now injured for the right back position, but they're not as good at the back as they think they are.
Right.
And the goalkeeper, I always feel, although he's been exceptionally good for Everton for so many years and for England on a regular, I always think there's a little moments of madness in him. And I think the bigger the occasion, when it's international football is bigger than Everton every week, than Everton and against Liverpool, Everton against wherever you're having yourself, Arsenal, Manchester City, Spurs, the English international team and the pressure that's on them is massively bigger than it is playing for Everton. And I think that bit of extra pressure affects Pickford, that there's often a little mistake and a little bit of madness. And, you know, he's got away with a bit already. Which was the match, the Ghana match. He got away with that one where he came out at the edge of the box and there was a clash and the referee gave nothing. I think he gave a free out for them. And I thought it was just outside the box. It could have been a free kick. But that's a good thing. The VAR are not interfering so often here. That's another side of it. But I don't think England are as good as they think they are at the back. And, you know, he's not so sure about the pairing of Stones and Constant Gay, he seems to think, are his best pair. And what happens then with Stones? Spence, I don't think Spence is great as a left back or a left back or a right back. Now the suggestion is he's going to go back to right back. I mean, Spence had an awful season for Tottenham. You'd be well aware of that. I mean,
that's why I'm wearing a Brazil top today, Brian, not a Spurs top.
Look, I'm getting up the pitch and I used to go, jeez, wait to see the breakdown that side and how slow he is to getting back. And you know, Tuchel's making a big idea about his recovery pace, and that's why he played him, started him in the last game. And I'm going, but his brain doesn't have recovery pace. His brain seems to go, someone else will do it for a while. Oh, maybe I should jog back. Oh, maybe I should sprint. It looks like danger. I just don't think he's good enough. And you know, Shaw would have been much more reliable left back for them to play that. But we'll see. I think they could win it. They've got some really good technical players around the middle of the pitch and some very good technical players, as we know, on the forward line. They clicked quite well in the Croatia match, but the Croatian team is an aging team that are nearly finished.
Remember, click follow in your OTB football podcast feed if you don't want to miss a second of our World Cup coverage. On Sunday's football show, journalist for the 42, David Snaid, joined John Duggan from the US. He described the colour that the fans are providing as one of the best things about the tournament this summer.
Another thing that stood out, and it was only a small sample size from some of the Uruguay fans, but just as well how they travelled to go to the World Cup, but they were saying, well, no, actually, our club is what means the most to us. Our club is still our everyday passion. So speaking to a couple of fans from Nacional, obviously a big team in Uruguay, and one of them was just chatting to me, and he was just saying, oh, like, we're the biggest club in Uruguay. If I start singing now, fans will hear and they'll come and they'll join in. So I just got them to sing straight away. I was like, go on, sing us a song then. And within about 3-4 minutes, we were surrounded. And it was all Nacional fans. And all of a sudden, it wasn't Uruguay jerseys that you were surrounded by. It was almost as if they were waiting to come from, obviously you're in Miami, they were waiting to come out from underneath the trees and underneath the shade. And they all just swarmed in. And there was a group of about 10, 15 lads and women, just all in the national jersey singing. It was pretty funny. It was pretty funny in that regard. And then the Norway fans as well, like, I'm sure it's come across on TV, but when I was in Boston, I did a piece for the 42, just of the like, final day in Boston and going to around Harvard and going down around where the kind of the Irish family memorial is downtown, and you just see so much of the Irish kind of history and links to Boston, and then going to Fenway Park and just seeing a lot of the Norway fans. And again, I was thinking, oh, you know, they must be absolutely buzzing and so excited. This was obviously before the France game, and I was talking to them, but they were all, it was like, it's just a reminder that every single football fan by and large is the exact same, because they were like, oh, we don't want to believe too much, because as soon as we believe in ourselves, we're going to be cursed. Do you know what I mean? And you're just like, you've got Erling Haaland, and even that we're saying, oh, don't play him against France, don't play him, we need him for the games that really matter. But that, even that line that I had from a fan, his name was Burke from just outside Oslo, talking to him in the back of the bleachers in Fenway. And he was just like, yeah, no, as soon as we believe too much, we're gonna be cursed. That kind of thing of a football fan where in the back of your mind, you think it can go wrong at any moment, you know.
And remember, if you don't want to miss a thing, become a member and sign up at offtheball.com/join. Steve Clarke says it was a straightforward decision to step down as Scotland manager, because that was always the plan if the World Cup didn't go well. The 62-year-old told his players on Saturday night his 7-year reign was over. The Scots failed to get out of their group at this summer's tournament, and his departure comes just a month after he signed the new 4-year contract with the Scottish FA. And Áine O'Gorman's become the League of Ireland's first female academy director. The former Ireland international has taken up the role with First Division side Bray Wanderers. The 37-year-old, who made 119 appearances during a 17-year international career and played at the World Cup in 2023, will lead all aspects of Bray's youth development system. Since she retired, O'Gorman from Wicklow has been an assistant coach of the Bray women's under-17s. That's about all we have time for in today's World Cup Daily. I'm Phil Egan. I'll be back with more tomorrow.
World Cup Daily on Off the Ball with Lynx, a proud sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026.
To unlock much more from the OTB football feed, sign up at offtheball.com/join now.